Hello and welcome back to the Student Pages podcast. Once again, as no surprise, I am here. It's your host, me, Grace Sanders. I am joined by my fellow Student Pages podcast host, Shamoon. Hello, Shamoon. How are you doing today?
I'm great to be here. I'm excited to get into this interview with you. I know you're the resident host, so we got a duo ship today. It's going to be fun speaking to Luke.
Speaking of, not only do we have you on the podcast today, we also have an award-winning film and television producer, the massively talented Luke Schiller. Hello, Luke. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here and have a chance to chat.
I guess we can launch straight into this. You have so much incredible information to talk about today. So I just wanted to hark back to the fact that you are an award-winning film and television producer. So for our listeners at home, can you tell us a little bit more about your background into film, as well as how you got involved in the TV industry in the first place?
Sure. Well, given that I'm so incredibly old, this could be a very, very long story, but I'll try and keep it short and funny, if at all possible, which is what I always aim for. But I came to film having studied languages and literature at university. So I'm a linguist, if you like, by training. I did German and Italian at Sussex University in the early 80s and left with an arts degree, which is a wonderful thing. But you do end up thinking, shit, what am I going to do with this? I better get a job. Where does this take me? I sort of came straight out of school. I didn't take a gap. Yeah, I just somewhat steamrolled into keeping my education going for various reasons. You know, I didn't have a great perspective on my career. It was a bit more kind of, it was the 80s, it was a bit more rock and roll, I guess. And my background's a bit more, this was somewhat eclectic, perhaps. So I left university with an arts degree and languages. I've always loved photography. I've always loved film and I've always loved travel. And through a friend of mine, heard about an agency that was looking for location scouts. Oh, that sounds like a good laugh. Photography, travel, who knows where that's going to lead. Maybe I'll do the Bond movie one day, which I sort of got quite close to, but massively screwed up. Yeah, so I started as a location scout. So I did that for quite a few years and it was fun. And I did get some nice exotic trips. Well, traveled around a bit and that was great fun. But I was sort of more interested in creating content really rather than being stuck in this niche. And I had the opportunity to stay in commercials and move up in the commercials production world. One of my very first jobs was with Ronald McDonald. Well, it was another commercial I was on. It was a very early commercial of mine. So there I was. We'd found a village hall to film this commercial in. I realized that commercials was not for me. The way the operations were ran with agencies and clients and so many people having so much to say about how to sell a lump of cheese, I just thought, that's not for me. So I ended up starting a production company with a location manager who I was working with. And we started making documentaries. And so that's how I shifted from location managing into production managing, which is a sort of more general thing where you have to bring in the crew and the talent and the cast. As a location manager, you're very much the location man.
No worries. You're being wonderfully humble as well about meaningful content when you have a film premiered at Cannes or Cannes. I'm not posh enough to know the difference, as well as a Sundance Jury Prize winner. Can you tell us a little bit more about your film, The Souvenir?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started working on those films probably in 2016, I guess. I'd worked with Joanna, who's the director, writer-director, before in 2011, I think, on a very low-budget film called Archipelago, which starred as then unknown Tom Hiddleston. It was his first feature, actually. And Joanna has a great knack for talent spotting. And he went from that to be Loki. That was his next gig. So there were 20 of us on an island kind of looking after ourselves. And next minute he was off to hang with Kenneth Branagh. But Joanna and I worked very well together. And some years later, after I'd moved abroad and done various other things, she asked whether I'd be interested in joining her on putting together The Souvenir, which was actually, it was a two-part story, The Souvenir 1 and 2. And it's the story of a young woman who dreams of becoming a filmmaker. It's quite autobiographical for Joanna. She, during part one, she applies to join film school. Meanwhile, she's in love with an older guy who's kind of mysterious and never quite sure what he claims to work for MI5, but seems to also have a drug habit, which he claims is all part of his undercover routine.
having worked for MI5, as you would.
Great cover story.
Yeah. I used to work in Afghanistan. I have to be a junkie. It's part of my cover. So it's a very kind of intense and minutely observed relationship drama about a young woman who falls in love with an older Roman who kind of throws her life and career off track, and they get embroiled in a very toxic codependency that she struggles to escape from, which she does in the end. And then this part two, which we shot immediately afterwards, is how she deals with the aftermath of their relationship without wishing to give too much of the story away without too many spoilers. But basically she moves on, and in part two she is now a film director, and she's trying to make her way as a film director, and the films span maybe a 6-year period. And part one, we were very lucky to get Tilda Swinton to play one of the lead roles, and her daughter Swinton Byrne plays her daughter, so it's mother and daughter playing mother and daughter. They'd never been
you
on screen.
You can't buy that kind of interaction, really. There's only so annoyed you can get at your own daughter, and only so annoying you can be at your own mum that you will get that chemistry on screen.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience, and you know, as meta as you get, because it's mother and daughter playing mother and daughter. The direct went to school with the mother and is godmother to the daughter, and we filmed in a studio as close a replica as possible. So we were filming the whole thing with period, set in the 80s, period furniture, period music. So she was kind of recreating where she lived as a student in the 80s. And yeah, the film was remarkable, and Joanna is remarkable. And we were very lucky to be invited to Sundance and went and won it, which was rather astonishing. And having won it, and even before then, it generated a huge amount of buzz. It had, you know, great backing from the BFI and from BBC Films. A24 then picked up the US rights. A24 are the kind of the coolest distributor financiers in America. And having got them on board and won Sundance, we were immediately funded for part two. So we were premiering part one and packaging part two at the same time. So it was a very hectic period, shall we say. And yeah, that's kind of a quick summary of the genesis and birth of the Souvenir.
Yeah, gotta say congratulations. It's a bit late from our end, but that's like astonishing what you've done with that. And you know, like you said, to have A24 on board, and they are, you know, one of the best in the industry right now. I think also, especially with indie, you know, that genre is produced so well by them.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, Luke, with you know, you said you began your film career in 1998.
Eight.
My bad. I think it's like interesting, like, yeah, your path into the industry. So like, what was it about the industry that you just felt it was so, you know, like you said, location managing to producing? What was it about producing you really liked?
Well, you know, I'd be honest, I never sort of thought I'm going to be a producer, but it turned out that I have a fairly broad skill set. I've done sound recording. I have done camera work. I have done some directing as well. I've attempted editing, and I'm absolutely terrible at it. Yeah, in a way, I think perhaps I'm what you might call an amateur in the original sense, which with the meaning of the word is a lover of many things. That's how the word came about. And I love being able to work with all the different departments and, you know, going on a journey of filmmaking, whether it's documentary or film, you know, coming up with an idea or working with a director on an idea and then developing it and then trying to find the finance and then bring the crew together, the locations together, and bringing in different crew members and all their different, especially in features, all the incredibly finely honed skills, whether it's camera or lighting or design or costume, and of course the actors. So as a producer, you sit beside the director and you get to enjoy all this incredible talent pulling together in what is no doubt the most collaborative art form on earth, with all the pluses and minuses that goes with that. And then taking an idea to a cinema, and you end up in a screening with a cinema full of, you know, in Cannes, there would be hundreds and hundreds, I think 500, 600 was a huge cinema. And you show your work and you think, oh, that's what all the fuss was about. And it's a kind of, it's a kind of physical thing. It's all very sort of intangible in a way until it's on the screen and you have a room full of people living the story that you've spent many years often putting together. And I mean, I love cinema. I love story. You know, the moment when the lights go down in a cinema and you just say, take me, where are we going to go? It's just a magical moment. And to be somewhat, to be on the part of the team that's really putting that together and take it from initial spark of conversation to a premiere and showing it to an audience. It's a magical, impossible, mysterious journey.
Just speaking a little bit more about how your life has been influenced by film and how film has actually been influenced your life. Your father, Peter Schiller, had his story immortalized by Warner Brothers in the story One Life. Can you tell us a little bit about how your family actually got involved in the making of that film?
Well, I need to correct you a little bit there. We weren't involved in the making of that film as such. My father's, the film One Life is about a man called Nicholas Winton. Nicholas Winton was a remarkable man who was a stockbroker of Jewish descent who'd sort of anglicized. And when before war broke out, a friend of his asked him whether he'd come to Prague to help deal with a refugee problem that was primarily Jewish refugees that were being kind of pounded out of the Sudetenland initially and were kind of conglomerating around the Prague area and had nowhere to go. And the Germans were sort of getting ready to march in. And my father comes from a Jewish family, and his parents realized that if they don't get him out of the country, he'll probably be murdered, which is what happened to a great number of my relatives. And but my grandparents, fortunately, were quite wealthy people. They had a big business in Prague, so they were able to pay because the British were basically selling visas to refugees. You had to put up something like £4,000 as a bond if you a sponsor family in the UK. And Nicholas Winton was instrumental in kind of connecting refugees, potential refugees, with host families in the UK. And the film is about the two timelines, which play both in 1938-39 and this now quite famous TV session TV show called That's Life, that someone called Esther Ranson used to host. And she did this rather remarkable thing. She got Nicholas Winton into a studio because he'd never talked about his experience. He was a very, very humble man, and he was very engaged in charitable work, but didn't like to brag. And he was invited to a studio, TV studio, and I don't know if it was live, it probably wasn't live, but on air was confronted by an older woman whose life he'd saved. He'd never really spoken about this. So suddenly he was outed as a kind of savior. And then they did another show a couple of weeks later, and the whole audience was filled with children and descendants of children who he was instrumental in rescuing. My father and my uncle were two of those children. They weren't in the audience, but they got out on the last kinder transport, which is what Nicholas Winton had been arranging together with his partners in the Czech Republic and in the UK, of course, as well. And yeah, they were very lucky. They got out on the last train out of town and managed to make a life in the UK, and were very lucky. And even more remarkably, my grandparents also got out when they arrived in the UK late 1940s. So my father came out in May 39, just before war broke out, because then the train stopped. So it was the last train out. And his parents got out, as I say, about a year and a half later, but would never talk about how they got here. So we have no idea how they got here, because it was just all too difficult, too raw, painful, traumatic. So we don't know how they actually got here. There was talk of a walking stick and diamonds and the Pyrenees, but that's literally all we know.
I think that's every story that every parent tells a child. Like, I got told that my parents had to do that just to go to school.
Damn, yeah. That's extraordinary, though. But like, with, you know, the One Life movie, like, you know, Peter's, just to meet him, that One Life event, I remember me and Gareth met you as well briefly, Luke, and we were just saying, you know, it's just amazing how, you know, Nicholas Winton had this impact. And I was saying how locally there's like statues at my local train station of him. And, you know, when you saw that film, you know, how did it feel watching James Hall's like depiction of One Life with the stories that, you know, you grew up with Peter that he told you about, you know, the Second World War?
It was a slightly out of body experience, to be honest with you. First of all, because I'm a producer, I sort of, you know, make films, but suddenly I was just there looking after my old man, you know, being red carpeted in as any other guest. There were sort of 11 surviving Kinder transportees who attended, and my father was one of them. And I went with my brother and two of his children. So we sort of were shepherded into the cinema, but, you know, red carpet and all of that stuff. My dad was, yeah, my dad can be a complicated man, but he was behaving very well. And I think he was slightly stunned. I think we were all quite nervous about the film because there's huge potential for doing something very sentimental and schmaltzy. But I'm happy to say that they avoided that temptation and I think did a very, you know, very good job putting the story together. In terms of what I saw on the screen and what my father told me about, it was very different, really, because my father was 7 when he left. So his memories are very specific, almost like snapshots, really, rather than a kind of a narrative structure that, you know, he remembers arriving at the sea in Holland and he'd never seen the sea and thinking, it's so high up, I'm going to get drowned, because he'd never seen the sea. There's this water piled up in front of him. He remembers being put on a train with his brother by his father. And as the train was leaving, a baby being thrown through the window and landing in his lap. And the nuns who were accompanying him taking this child. So he has kind of the snapshots that, of course, are his memories. They're not in the film. So there isn't this sort of narrative structure. I mean, the parents giving the children things to take on the train, my father has told me about, you know, he was given a pencil case by his grandmother so he could learn to write at school, and a little kind of a brooch that he wore around his neck. And there's scenes like that in the film. And one of the extraordinary moments in the film was when the Germans, the Nazis, are invading Prague, and the refugee office that's coordinating the rescue of these children realizes that their offices are about to be raided. They did what most authorities did in this country, which is they burnt all the paperwork. So all the public offices in the Czech Republic, or in Czechoslovakia, as it then was, were basically burning as much as they could. So the Germans wouldn't have records of who is where, and especially who was Jewish. So there was a lot of burning of documents. And there's a scene in the film when I was sitting next to my dad, and next to him, on the other side, was a member of the Association of Jewish Refugees who we've kind of been in touch with, who are helping on various issues, including acquiring Czech nationality, which is quite an interesting subject. But as the building is being raided, or they're about to be raided, they're throwing documents out the window and burning them. And one of the documents that flutters big across the screen has my father and my uncle's name on it. So it's actually a facsimile of the original transport documents, or the list that Nicholas Winton had compiled. And there's my father's name burning, coming down the screen. And that was just sort of, yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I think I can tell you that. It was a pretty emotional moment.
For sure. And, you know, this story is a very emotional one, especially, I mean, when I was there at that event with Gareth, we were just overwhelmed with the emotion of just seeing, you know, 12 of the original children on the Kinder transport, and then, you know, the family ties you had with your own father being one of them, and, you know, him, you know, that sense of emotion that you must have had, like it coming full circle. I mean, did you ever think there was going to be a story made on the big screen about specifically, you know, these children, and also it being your father? Because, you know, it is obviously such an important story to tell. Like you said, there's not a lot you know about it. You just know we know what Nicholas Winton did, but we never, like you said, he was a humble man. It was not something that was out there until a certain point.
There have, in fact, been other productions that tell this story, but they're Czech. And one of them, I think, is called Into the Arms of Strangers, that won an Emmy, or it was a documentary. But there's a guy called Matej Minac, I think he's called. He's a Czech director who told this story, but for TV, without, you know, Hollywood behind it and Anthony Hopkins. So those films have not really been, they haven't really traveled. And I myself am working on a story as well. So, you know, I've been working with my father and a writer, finding a way of telling the story as well. It's a very, very different version of it. It doesn't have the sort of Esther Ransom hook, which is a very clever way into the story, but not one that, well, A, my father wasn't there, and B, it's not necessarily the way I'd like to go into the story. So, you know, the story has been told. It's just people, this is the first time it's getting really big exposure, of course, because of Seesaw, huge producers, and Anthony Hopkins is Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
And amazing he is too. And Johnny Flynn, I thought, was fantastic in this film as well. I thought it was really amazing.
It's so wonderful to hear you speak with so much emotion about film, and obviously how film can impact our own emotions as well. And you just spoke, give us a little tidbit about possibly some future work that you have coming up as well. So I just wanted to take this moment to ask a little bit more about if you have any upcoming development over at Atlas Films too.
Yeah, of course. I've got a number of projects in development. I've got a sort of high-end television drama that's set in Africa, actually. It's about a photojournalist who goes back home, and she's from the Sahel region, and she gets embroiled in a whole lot of political complications, corruption, and it's a very thrilling, dramatic, dangerous, and sort of an environmental thriller to some extent. That's a TV series I've been working on for some years. And as I mentioned, I'm also working on a film that's kind of about my father and his family, that switches, which plays in pre-war. So the time when his family and families like his had a very comfortable, stable life. They were acclimatized. They were German speakers. My grandfather was a decorated war hero on the German side from World War One, and not a lot of people know about that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, he Austro-Hungarian Empire, he fought in World War One. You know, he spoke German; that was his first language. You know, they were assimilated Jews. They did go to the synagogue occasionally, but they were not really practicing at all. So they were cultural Jews, if you like, rather than practicing. So it's about the times before the war, the good times, and then there is part of the, of course, the story coming to the UK is also told, but then it's about him setting up, becoming a family man in the 60s in the UK. And it kind of plays mainly between the 30s and the 60s, which is quite a different way into this story.
That sounds incredible. Since this is the Student Pages podcast, we always like to close the podcast with a question about if you have any advice or any tidbits or just any words of wisdom or truth for any students out there who, like yourself, are looking to capture film and capture TV to tell the important stories within their life.
My best advice would be open to chance. What do they say? The lucky person is the one who takes their chances. So it's good to have a plan, but it's good to be open to things that come your way, because say yes to as much as possible. You don't know where it's going to lead, who you're going to meet. And, you know, one thing leads to another. It's not a very structured industry. I mean, I think it's more structured now because, you know, when I entered the industry, very, very few people had studied film. People started as runners, really, and worked their way up, which is still the case, but they didn't come with MAs in filmmaking or editing or directing. It was more kind of hands-on. So you learned from the old hands, but which is how I learned to do what I do. But I think be open to chance, and all experience, even the ones that might be terrible at the time, can be helpful and informative. And it's a roller coaster ride of an industry. And a director friend of mine said, we are like seamen in this industry. You know, you get on a boat, which is the production you're on. You don't know necessarily where it's going to go and how long it's going to take. You might find yourself for 3 months in a jungle, or 4 weeks in New York, or done wildlife films, said five months in a jungle in Costa Rica. Be open to things if that's what you want. I mean, there is a life of adventure in there, which is one of the things I have relished most. And you get to work with all sorts of people, and yeah, be open to things, you know. And, you know, you might think that if someone offers you a gig as a second camera or doing some sound work, do it. You never know. You might suddenly find that that's actually what you want to do most of all, or it'll take you down a path to something remarkable. It's a journey, it's an adventurous journey.
So Luke, you mentioned about you doing tutoring and you're a mentor. I'd love for you to elaborate on that, what you do with that exactly.
Yeah, it's something I've been doing for quite a few years now. I've worked at the LFS quite a lot, and I've also worked on various sort of pan-European training programs, which have taken me to Italy and Hungary and Paris and all around the place. It's great fun working with young talent. One sometimes gets quite jaded in this industry. So I think there's an interesting kind of mutual flow you can get where you feel the energy and the passion of young people who have yet to have their fingers burnt in some ways, but also to be able to kind of bring the sort of my experience to bear and help them look at something that they're developing. So the kind of tutoring I've been done has been a lot of script developing, but also I've done straight producer training. So talking, you know, pitch to premiere, where you talk about the process from taking an idea to a premiere. So what does that mean? What is that journey, the producer's journey, which for people who want to get into the business is obviously quite an interesting thing to hear, and I think quite helpful and can perhaps save them a lot of pain, grief and money along the way. So that's something I'm quite passionate about doing as well. And yeah, I've done quite a lot of that in the past, and I'm still doing mentoring, sort of one-to-one mentoring on occasion. So that's just one of the things I do whilst developing projects as well, and obviously producing and running my own small production company here in London.
Fantastic.
Thank you ever so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Luke. It's been so interesting to hear you talk about film. And thank you ever so much for joining me today, Shamoon. And thank you ever so much for listening, Student Pages podcast listeners at home. I'll be back with you very, very shortly with another Student Pages podcast. But in the meantime, it's been lovely to have you. Goodbye, Luke. Goodbye, Shamoon. And goodbye, everyone at home.